Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And, Jim, we actually have a good martini. Not that's could have been worse or bad for Democrats, but an actual good martini here. And we go to Jake Tapper at CNN, who was reporting on a speech that President Obama made, scolding the press about its 2016 coverage. There's two clips here. One is mostly about what Obama said, and one is Tapper's reaction to Obama.
The media critic-in-chief had some tough love for journalism Monday night.
Because while fairness is the hallmark of good journalism, false equivalency all too often these days can be a fatal flaw.
Imploring us to do a better job at covering campaign 2016.
A job well done is about more than just handing someone a microphone. But it's to probe and to question and to dig deeper and to demand more.
Always fun to hear the guy, Jim, that compared the Crusades to ISIS, chiding others for false equivalency. But then Jake Tapper said, well, you made some good points about the press, but you might want to look in the mirror.
The president's criticisms were well said and quite apt. But for many journalists, the messenger was a curious one. Many believe that Obama's call for us to probe and dig deeper and find out more has been made far more difficult by his administration than any in recent decades. A far cry from the assurances he offered as he first took office. President Obama's advice for journalists Monday night was spot on, but Mr. President, with all due respect, when one of the Washington Post's editors involved in the coverage of Watergate says that your administration's attempt to fight leaks and control the media is, quote, the most aggressive I've seen since the Nixon administration, well, maybe, just maybe, your lecturing would be better delivered to your own administration.
Bravo for calling out the hypocrisy there, and bravo to Jake Tapper for doing a story that I didn't see anywhere else.
Yeah, and you know, it's worth noting there that there's something of a danger that Barack Obama could end up, like, ruining what is a perfectly legitimate critique by being the guy who makes it.
Right.
Like, there's reason to say, hey, why does CNN and a bunch of other cable networks broadcast Trump rallies pretty much, you know, live, and if not in their entirety, then for extremely long stretches, a kind of an honor and a level of coverage that they simply didn't give Marco Rubio unless Rubio was insulting Trump. Very rarely give Kasich this, very rarely give Cruz this. And the explanation is, well, you know, he's the front runner. He's going to get more coverage than, say, a Jim Gilmore. Okay, but the race is now down to three guys, right? And just the level of coverage is, you know, wildly disparative. Obama deserved this. Obama, that's what somebody would say. Obama said, you know, in 2008, I got asked really tough questions. Really? And I was held accountable. Really? And the idea, look, the other thing is that I don't think actually the questions being thrown at Trump are necessarily soft, or at least not all that often. He does say to, you know, nothing too hard, Mika, during some of these appearances. But, you know, Charlie Sykes certainly asked him a bunch of tough questions. Just that you get word salad in response. So, you know, that I don't really think that's actually – I'm not so sure that relentlessly soft coverage is the problem of Trump. I do think there has been long stretches of largely uncritical or simply turning over the microphone. And just once, I just like to say, you know, when he gives this long meandering word salad, as he did with Anderson – at one point, Anderson Cooper had to say in his town hall earlier this week – Anderson Cooper said, well, the question was originally about protecting the rights of religious minorities in an era of terror. How do we do that? Because he had given like 5 minutes that had nothing to do with the question about that. So good on Tapper for making this critique. And Mr. President, for those of us who are upset about the type of coverage and when, you know, there is kind of this false equivalence or, you know, turning over the microphone to a candidate, Mr. President, stop helping.
On to the bad martini now, Jim. And earlier this week, we looked at some polls suggesting that Donald Trump does not match up well with Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders, but those were popular vote polls, even though they were pretty large margins, usually double digits, certainly was with Bernie Sanders. Ultimately, as we all know from 2000, and anyone who actually knows how the system works, it comes down to the Electoral College, and right now you need 270 electoral votes to win. Larry Sabato and his gang over at Crystal Ball and the University of Virginia have put out their updated map. And first they start with the base map that they went with in May of last year, where a generic Republican, generic Democrat, probably start on the electoral map, and Republicans start at a disadvantage. They essentially start with the 206 electoral votes that Mitt Romney won in 2012, and the Democrats start with about 247, with 85 considered toss-ups. But now that we've moved further in the process and Trump has a sizable delegate lead, they decided to run the numbers on what it looks like if, in fact, Trump is the nominee. 347 for the Democrats, 191 for the Democrats. Because if Republicans want to get to 270 from 206, you're going to need to win states like Florida and Virginia and Ohio and then pick up preferably one or more of these, Iowa, Colorado, Nevada, things like that. According to the Sabato map, the Democrats win every single one of those, including North Carolina, which had been leaning Republicans on the generic map. That now goes to the Democrats as well. And so it goes from a map that's difficult but not impossible for Republicans to one that looks like a very sizable Democratic win, all things being equal, at least today. So, Jim, another alarming number here.
None of this is enormously surprising. When you see Donald Trump trailing Hillary badly head-to-head nationally, it stands to reason that he would not do well in any of these key swing states. Some of these swing states, there's a decent amount of head-to-head polling. Other ones, not so much. I found it really interesting, by the way, Greg, that there's only been one poll of Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump head-to-head in the state of Texas so far. That one had Trump ahead by two. This was back in late 2015. It's conceivable those numbers have changed. I'd really love to see these kinds of numbers, a head-to-head polling between the two, particularly if there's no major third party or third option there, just to see how this shakes out, how this turns out, because it could be as bad as Sabato says, or it could be much, much worse. One of the things that's really unnerving about that, if you're a Republican looking at this map, is that let's note that in the last two presidential elections, 48 of the 50 states voted exactly the same way,
right,
both times. On this map, those 48 stay the same way unless you see one of the red states flipping, like Arizona or Georgia or Missouri flipping, or Indiana flipping into the blue column. If that occurs, then we're really in trouble. So we basically are looking at a very bad outlook here, probably down ticket losses. And, I don't see the silver lining here. I don't see the advantage here. I don't know about you, Greg. I look at that and I think, okay, the job for the delegates in Cleveland just got a lot easier. people might be upset if Trump doesn't get the nomination. Yeah, but if you nominate him, you lose on a grand epic scale, and your objective in politics is to not do that. So it strikes me as pretty straightforward, but I'm going to guess there are some people who say, no, if he won the most votes, he has to be the nominee no matter what the terrible, terrible, catastrophic consequences are.
Yeah, I'd kind of like to see other maps just to see how Cruz would match up, and I'm sure the Kasich campaign would like to see one too. But you also mentioned another thing in passing there that I think could be very, very telling for folks going forward, and that's what the Senate outlook would look like given Trump as the nominee versus others as the nominee. So while it's certainly sobering to look at what a Clinton versus Trump matchup is like, it'd be great to have some more numbers on the down ballot races and also to see how much things would actually change if there were a different GOP nominee. So Larry, get to work.
Yeah, they'll work on that eventually. My colleague Alexis Levison wrote about this a little bit. I wrote about the House yesterday. You want to know the good news there, Greg?
What?
Republicans might not lose the House.
Might not.
It might just be a couple dozen seats they lose.
Oh, that's all.
See? So no big worry. The 30-seat margin will probably hold. Everybody can relax. Take that deep breath. Yeah, I know, but I'd rather not lose a couple dozen seats, but, that's me.
On to the crazy martini now. And, Jim, just when you thought that the reaction to the charges against Corey Lewandowski, against Michelle Fields, had not created enough of a firestorm or a head slapper, now the media itself has done no favors for Michelle Fields here. This is courtesy of Mediaite. Former Breitbart reporter Michelle Fields has left her Washington, D.C. apartment after news outlets accidentally published Fields' address and phone number, opening her up to harassment. Fields successfully filed police charges against Donald Trump campaign manager Corey Lewandowski, leading to Lewandowski's arrest for battery Tuesday. But when Fox News and BuzzFeed published Lewandowski's arrest report online, they forgot to redact Fields' personal information. Fields told The Blaze that she has been swamped with threatening messages on her phone ever since. Some of those threats were bad enough that she no longer felt safe staying in her apartment. So, Jim, obviously, I don't think we can necessarily ascribe an intentional decision necessarily to leave that information on. There was probably just very sloppy journalism, but nonetheless, it's leading to more trouble for Michelle Fields, and we're seeing once again the very ugly side of this campaign.
Yeah, again, like you, this is one of the, I just want to throw out my hands because it seems reasonable to assume that Fox News and BuzzFeed didn't want this outcome to happen. But on the other hand, look, when you have a broadcasting platform, when you want to have a great audience, when you want to inform the public, you have to take that responsibility seriously. And it's so simple and basic to just look at a official document. Check to see if it's got anybody's address on it and cross it out, black it out, you know, blur it on the screen. Do whatever you have to do because these are the types of consequences. We live in a crazy world, and I think if you spend any time on social media, you can tell that the anger and irrationality and rage that is out there is only getting worse. And you already knew that Michelle Fields was, you know, being denounced from the very top of the Trump campaign, and all of his followers think she's the devil and all that stuff. I mean, like, God, just what egregiously bad decision-making. It is just morally exhausting to spend any time watching this campaign, and just a little bit of more caution, just a little bit more diligence would avoid, you know, bad outcomes like this one.
Franklin Graham's going around the country telling people, regardless of who they're voting for, to pray for the country. It's stories like these that show you that Franklin Graham is probably the guy going around the country with the most urgent message right now. Jim, it's just a really depressing story that adds to an already depressing story. But hey, we got a nice day here in Washington today, so fuck up, everybody. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and tune in again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.